Snakes. Landmines. And grass fires. A podcast about real estate.
Are we recording now?
We are recording, so say hello.
Hello.
No, sir, go ahead and start.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome back again to Snakes, Landmines, and Grass Fires.
say that 10 times fast.
No. Snakes, grass fires. Start over.
Okay.
Edit. I got to get my rhythm going here. Snakes, grass fires, and landmines.
Great. Right,
welcome, everyone. Another episode of Snakes, Grass Fires, and Landmines. And this is the last part of our commercial contract review. And this is commercial contract, the end. Welcome, Lester Langdon, once again. Here we are at the Poodle Ranch.
What's new with the Poodle Ranch, anyway? How many are in the herd?
We have quite a few in the herd. The puppies are getting big. They're getting ready to go to their new homes very shortly after the first of the year.
So how many do we have in the herd?
I don't know. I lost count. I think it's...
In the millions.
In the millions.
So the ranch hand, that would be me, has been picking pecans and raking leaves to try to find the pecans. I've got about a bushel, and I think I've cracked about half of them. We have lots of pecans.
I'm still waiting for my pecan pie, though.
You may have to help.
That wasn't in the deal. Okay. All right. So I believe we left off at the end of paragraph 15. So the next paragraph would be 16. That's how that works.
How did you know that?
What happens if the property is damaged before closing?
So if the seller does not restore the property, several things can happen. Either the earnest money and the feasibility option fee can be returned to the buyer, or the time for closing can be extended 15 days to give the buyer, the seller, the opportunity to restore the property, or the buyer can take the property in its current condition and get the insurance proceeds and a credit from the seller for the insurance deductible amount. So there's a lot to think about that.
Why can you only extend the closing for 15 days? What if you need longer than that?
You probably can do an amendment to that effect, but the main body of the contract says you get at least 15 days.
I got it. Okay. So what happens if the property is condemned?
By let's say the city or the county or whomever.
Okay.
And of course the buyer, and I've actually had this happen before. The Metro Rail Route condemned part of an apartment property that I was selling, and therefore it reduced his income, his revenues from his apartments, but his monthly payment stayed the same. Doesn't seem fair, but he kind of got screwed that way. So if the property is condemned, the buyer can terminate and get a refund of the earnest money and refund of his option feasibility fee. Or the buyer can defend the condemnation.
What do you mean, defend the condemnation?
Meaning you go to court and you say, hey, you can't take this property, which means they're just going to offer you more money.
That sounds expensive, too, in legal fees and time and effort. So, yes.
Well, you know, it's a whole field in itself.
What happens? What about paragraph 17?
If there is a lawsuit, the loser pays the attorney's fees for everybody.
Okay. Pretty succinct. Paragraph 18. What happens to the earnest money if the deal doesn't happen?
The party that defaulted or was in breach should release the earnest money to the other party. And if they do not, then whoever thinks they should have got the earnest money back can I write a letter to the other party saying, hey, release my earnest money. And if the title company does not get permission to release the earnest money, then the party that should have gotten the earnest money can file a lawsuit and get damages and the earnest monies and attorney's fees and the cost of the lawsuit.
So obviously it's just easier to release the earnest money.
And if for some reason the title company doesn't get permission to release earnest money, or if there's a dispute, both parties saying that they deserve it, if the earnest money is kept by the title company for a year, they give it to the state of Texas.
Uh-oh.
And then the buyer can wait a year and say, hey, that belongs to me. Send it to me.
That sounds very difficult.
It's complicated.
I don't think we've ever gotten to that stage where it's been sent to the state.
Yes, I have.
No, come on.
Yes,
no,
actually,
no, no.
You've met this buyer, actually. And
I have.
And I think the money did get sent to the state. And I think that the buyer did write a letter to the state saying, send me the money.
Wow. Well, you've seen every snake that is possibly in the grass.
Every day I say that, and every day I see a different color snake.
Bigger, smaller, little, they're everywhere. Okay, well, also, paragraph 18 lets us check a box. What does that mean? Oh, there's a snake.
Okay, 18 will let you check the box for the buyer or for the seller to do a 1031 tax-deferred exchange. And we will discuss this tax code in an upcoming podcast because we can spend a lot of time on it.
I know, and it's a really good tool to use.
And we don't have to put this in the paragraph 12 special provisions because paragraph 18 is dedicated to 1031 tax-deferred exchanges. There's a box for the buyer to do a tax-deferred exchange. There's also a box for the seller, and you can check both boxes.
Now, what is paragraph 19, property condition statement?
It's sort of like when you sell a house in the state of Texas, you're required to do a seller disclosure notice. Well, a property condition statement is the same thing, but for commercial properties. Except that in Texas, almost every house is required to. In the state of Texas, you're required as a seller to do a seller disclosure notice. You're not required as a seller of commercial property to do a property condition statement.
You said almost every home is required. I thought every home was required.
There are some exemptions, wills and trusts and probate properties.
Oh, okay. Good point.
So the issue is, do you do a property condition statement? Or do you check the box saying the seller is not aware of bad property conditions? Because there's two boxes. So there's two ways to view this issue. And it can be argued that if a seller knows of significant problems with a property, the seller should disclose to the buyer to avoid a lawsuit in the future. The other view is that the seller should not check either box, and should not make any statement, and should encourage the buyer to hire a licensed building inspector. I am inclined to disclose important, significant problems with a property that the seller is aware of. I do not need any legal challenges.
No, we don't.
So disclose, disclose, disclose.
Now, paragraph 20 talks about notices. Explain that, please.
Says that the buyer and or the seller can receive notices by their email address. You can check the box and put in the email address, and it says, hey, you don't have to give me a phone call. You don't have to write me a letter. You can just send me an email. And I'm inclined not to agree to be noticed by email because it can get lost in cyberspace. You can send me an email instead of sending me a letter.
What about, can you check that and request a phone call or something else?
I would just be inclined not to check the box and make them send me a letter so that we don't get into a spitting match.
I see. Okay. What does paragraph 21 say? It
says parties agree to mediation to solve a dispute before you actually go further in litigation. let's sit down like reasonable people and just work this out.
Yes,
I know people. Let's try. I know people that have been to mediation twice.
Oh, okay, really? Sounds almost like Congress trying to work out something. Okay,
no, it's probably easier.
What's paragraph 22?
Says the contract is binding and specifies the addenda which are to be included in the contract. Do not forget to include all the addenda. Check all the boxes. An addendum that you wanted to be included with this contract, but you forget to check the box, then it's not part of the contract.
That is a really tricky part, too.
This may bite you later if
you
don't check the box.
I remember going through all those boxes and check this box, and here's the form, here's boxes, the form. I mean, in commercial contracts, there are a lot of addendums. What's paragraph 23?
Time is of essence. Is that succinct?
Yes, it is.
That means ASAP.
Right. Paragraph 24 is important. It sets the clock, right?
It sets the clock to start, and you need to know when you must perform certain duties. It's the effective date for a commercial contract is the day that the title company receives the contract signed by all parties. And, of course, you get a written receipt from the title company with a date stamped on it or written on it and signed by the title company, as opposed to a residential contract, which becomes effective when buyer and seller have signed it. It has got nothing to do with when the title company receives it if it's a residential contract. And it can be confusing.
It is confusing.
Yeah. So basically, if it's a commercial contract, it's when the title company gives you a receipt. If it's a residential contract, it's when the buyer and seller have signed it.
I wonder why they make that distinction. They like to keep life complicated. What else does paragraph 25 discuss?
Paragraph also discusses flood districts and sewer areas and flood areas and lead-based paint and mold remediation certificates. So you have to read it very carefully.
And you need a professional like Lester Langdon.
There's all kinds of snakes out there.
Exactly. All right, and paragraph 26 includes the drop-dead date for signatures.
And that's not people dropping dead. That's the contract dropping dead.
Gotcha.
And it's a deadline for the signatures for both the buyer and the seller. And if they don't sign it by that date, then you don't have a valid contract. So isn't this fun?
It is.
So now we would like everybody to go to the website, eustonius.com. That's Houston, I-U-S.com. And we'd like you also, please, to go to your Apple iTunes and give a good review of this podcast. Or you can give us a call, and you can give us a call at 281-236-8189. And keep listening. We're going to talk about amendments and addenda in future podcasts.
Thank you. We learned a lot today. Thanks, Lester.
Bye-bye.